Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 23, the demigods regain the heavenly planets, text number 16. Mantratas Tantratas Chitram.
Mantratas Tantratas Chitram.
Desha Kalarha Vastutaha. Sarvam Karoti Nishchidram. Anusankirtanam Tava. Mantrataha. In pronouncing the Vedic mantras improperly. Tantrataha. In insufficient knowledge for following the regular principles. Chidram. Discrepancy. Desha. In the matter of country. Kala. And time. Arha. And recipient. Vastutaha. And paraphernalia. Sarvam, all these, karoti, makes, nischidram, without discrepancy, anusankirtanam, constantly chanting the holy name, tava, of your lordship. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. There may be discrepancies in pronouncing the mantras and observing the regular principles, and moreover, there may be discrepancies in regard to time, place, person, and paraphernalia. But when your Lordship's holy name is chanted, everything becomes faultless. Purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Kevalam. Hare Naivava Kevalam. Kalo Nashdeva 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 Gantir Anyata. In this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way, there is no other way. There is no other way. Brihat Naradiya Purana 38:126. This age of Kali is extremely difficult to perform Vedic ritualistic ceremonies or sacrifices perfectly. Hardly anyone can chant the Vedic mantras with perfect pronunciation or accumulate the paraphernalia for Vedic performances. Therefore, the sacrifice recommended in this age is Sankirtan, constant chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Yajnyai Sankirtana Prayar Yanti Hi Sumedha Saha. The Bhagavatam 11:529. Instead of wasting time performing Vedic sacrifices, those who are intelligent, those who possess good brain substance, should take to the chanting of the Lord's holy name, and thus perform sacrifice perfectly. I have seen that many religious leaders are addicted to performing yajnas, and spending hundreds and thousands of rupees for imperfect sacrificial performances. This is a lesson for those who unnecessarily execute such imperfect sacrifices. We should take the advice of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Yagyayu Sankirtana Prayar, Yanti Hi Sumedha Saha. Although Sukracharya was a strict brahmana, addicted to ritualistic activities, he also omitted Nischidram Anusankirtanam Tava. My Lord, constant chanting the holy name of your Lordship makes everything perfect. Kali Yuga, the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies cannot be performed as perfectly as before. Therefore, Srila Jiva Goswami has recommended that although one should take care to follow all the principles and every kind of spiritual activity, especially to worship in worship of the deity, there is still a chance of discrepancies. One should compensate for this by chanting the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we therefore give special stress to the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra in all activities. So the text again. Mantra tas tantra tas chidram desha kalarha vastutaha sarvam karoti nishtidram anusankirtanam tava. There may be discrepancies when pronouncing the mantras and observing the regular principles, and moreover, there may be discrepancies in regard to time, place, person, and paraphernalia. But when your Lordship's holy name is chanted, everything becomes faultless. It is said that in the age of Krita Yuga or Satya Yuga, Krita Tadayato Vishnum, Tretiyam Yajito Mukai, Dwarpamam Paricharyam, Kalotadari Kirtanam. What was achieved by meditation in Satya Yuga was achieved by performance of sacrifice in the Treta Yuga. And what was achieved in Treta Yuga was achieved in Dwarpa Yuga by temple worship. And what can be achieved by all those in the other yugas can be achieved by chanting the holy name. But we shouldn't think that the process of self-realization changes from yuga to yuga. The process is always the same. At least the basic principle. The process may be different, but the basic principles are the same. The same principles that Krishna explained in Bhagavad Gita as karma yoga, jnana yoga, astanga yoga, and bhakti yoga. These are eternal steps in progress towards bhakti yoga. Because conditioned life means that one has come to the material world to do two things. To imagine oneself to be the controller and the enjoyer. Now it's not that apparently this body is not controlling something, and it's not that apparently we don't get some kind of enjoyment out of the material energy. But our mistake is that we think we're the only controller and we're the only enjoyer. That we have there's no other mechanism than by directly confronting the material nature and controlling it. Because the conditioned soul doesn't understand that he's actually not part of the material world. That's what a conditioned soul means. The conditioned soul actually believes that whatever they're doing independently. Now, it's not that we're not doing anything. It would be rather boring to think we're not doing anything. And then we blame everything on Krishna. I'm not doing anything, so everything that's going on must be Krishna's fault. I'm just one of the many victims that are a victim of Krishna. Or maybe Krishna is a nice person. It is Chaturmasya and he's asleep, so he doesn't know what's going on. It's just being randomly done by his police force, the material nature, who doesn't like good people like me. So many speculations. But according to Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says different things, such as, we're not the doer. And then he says, we are the doer. And he says, we're not the independent doer. So which do you believe? Maybe Krishna doesn't know. Because in one place he says that yagna tat kamano nyatra lokayam karma vandanai tarartam apikondeya mukta sangha samachara, that work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed, otherwise work binds one to this material world. Perform prescribed duties for his satisfaction, O son of Kunti, And in this way, you'll always remain unattached and free from bondage. So he wants us to work, to perform sacrifice. But I thought we're not doing anything. So how can we work if we're not doing anything? Then he says, Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankaravimudatma kartaham iti manyate. That the foolish person, under the spell of the modes of nature, thinks himself to be the doer of activities, which are actually carried out by the three modes. So I'm innocent. I'm not doing anything. It's the three modes that are responsible. And then Krishna says, Adishtanam tata karata karanam chapritag vidan vivitas chapritag chesta daivam chaivatra panchama. There are five causes of every activity, beginning with adishtanam, the body. And then adishtanam tata karta. So who's the karta? No one knows who the karta is. Karta means the doer. And who's the doer? That's right. That's the verse. It says five. Well, who's the karta? Who's the karta? Anyone here know karta? It's a name, Kartamashi. Probably there's one deity of Krishna with his hand on his waist, Gopal deity. And he has a flute. And Prabhupada said he's the Kartamashi deity. What's that? Prabhupada called him Kartamashi. He's a Kartamashi. He's a deity of Gopal holding his hand on his waist and he has a flute. He's blue. Little cowherd boy. Kartamashi. Means the doer. So, who else is a doer? Anyone here know any doers? Well, actually, in this verse, karta means the soul. The soul. So, how is the soul doing anything? First, we say, he's a fool if he thinks he's doing anything. Now, he's saying he's doing something. Is Krishna schizophrenic? So, what is the soul doing? Excuse me? Yes, he's desiring. Anyone ever notice we have some capacity to desire? Just like we came here with a basket full of ice cream. Would anyone feel any desire at this present moment? Maybe. Depends how much ice cream you ate the day before. So we have a capacity to desire. As a matter of fact, everything we're looking at, we're either desiring it subtly, or we're rejecting it, or we don't care about it. We're neutral desire. But we actually have an emotion towards everything that we observe, everything we taste, everything we touch, everything we smell. Through all our senses, it's all based on desire. It's all, we're experiencing some consciousness which is produced desire, thinking and feeling, and then willing. And based upon our desire, we're willing. Or we're unwilling. So what is it? Yes, we're desiring, but we're not our desire is meaningless unless we have a body. Just like if you were a ghost, you'd still have desires. Isn't that good? But you wouldn't have a body to fulfill them. So you couldn't do anything, very much, except you can go around haunting people. And maybe if you were a good enough ghost, and you willed enough, you could actually move things around in the material world. Krishna would arrange it that they move around because your desire is so strong. But one would be limited as a ghost, although the ghost is full of desires. So we do need adishtanam, a place of action, the body. Tata karanam. And what does karana mean? No Sanskrit scholars here? Karnam. Anyone ever hear the word Karna Vishnu? Karna Dakshai Vishnu? No, the Karna Dakshai Vishnu is Mahavishnu, who lies down. But Karna means the senses, including the active senses, the five working senses, and the five knowledge-acquiring senses. So Karna, we have a body, but we could be blind also. We could have a body and be blind. We could be deaf. We couldn't feel anything. So there's also, it's not just having a body, we also have to have some senses. Karna, pritak. Pritak is the junction between the soul and the body and the material existence, which is the false ego, by which he imagines he's part of the material existence. Otherwise, without the false ego, we'd be experiencing the material world, because we're conscious, if we're participating in material activities, but we wouldn't identify ourselves with it. So we also need a false ego. And then there is Daiva. Who's Daiva?
Nature.
What's that?
Nature.
No. We already have four. We have, what's the first one? Anyone awake? What's the first one? Adishtanam. What's the first one? Don't be shy, even if you get it wrong. Adishtanam? The first one was the super soul, I said? What's that? The body. Anyone have a body around here? Yes, your body. Something we all have in common, we have a material body. Adishtanam. And who's the karta? The soul, yeah, desiring. And karnam, what's karnam? The senses. And pritak? The false ego in contact with material energy. And who would be daiva? The super soul. Daiva chaivatma panchamam. So there are five causes. And ultimately it's the super soul. Anyone who doesn't consider the super soul, Krishna says, is not very intelligent. If we think we're doing anything independently of the super soul, then we're not very intelligent. So we've just gotten some intelligence, a little bit, that we know we're not doing anything independently of Krishna. And not only independently of Krishna, but unless Krishna supplies the other ingredients, like the body, the senses, unless we have, for spiritual life we need a spiritual ego, and for material life we need a false ego. So Krishna is supplying all these things. So the soul is also necessary. If the soul doesn't desire material things, then he'll desire spiritual things. He has to desire. So everything is going on by a combination of these five factors. But the soul, when he thinks himself to be the only doer, then he's not very intelligent and can't see things as they are. Therefore, he's considered to be Prakriti, Kriyamanani, Gunai, Karmani, Sarvasha, Ahankara, Vimudatma, Kartaham, Iti, Manyate. So here we have the same words again. Kartaham, I am the doer. I am the only doer. Because under the spell of the false ego, we think ourselves to be the only doer. We don't take into account the other factors. And therefore we consider it Vimuda, or Muda, fool. Anyone know any fools around here? The whole material universe is full of fools. From Brahma down to the meanest insect, everyone is a fool and rascal. But in modern society, Prahlad Maharaj said, everyone is a vimuda, they're not only asses, but they're super asses. Vimuda, vimu means super. Because they're not only asses, they're not only working hard, but they're creating problems for themselves. It's all right. In previous ages, people identified themselves with the body and they work, but they knew what actually they get. They knew how to get something valuable out of their activity. But nowadays, people are working and getting absolutely nothing out of what they're doing, practically speaking. And they're puffed up, thinking they're advancing. They're getting less and less and less, and they think they're actually getting more and more and more. So that's called vimuda. The very activities that are causing them distress, they're becoming more and more enthusiastic about doing. So they become absolutely mad and crazy. Now the only, in Satyayuga, people are able to meditate because they knew what the objective of life was. They could simply sit in one place, like the Brahmin in the nectar of devotion, and think about Krishna and perform devotional service even within their minds. And they were in ecstasy. There was all varieties of pleasure and love and ecstasy beyond what we could possibly imagine just by sitting down and thinking about serving Krishna as a Brahmin in the pastime. In the nectar of devotion, he would sit down and he'd see the deities within his heart. And he'd go to the Ganges and the Saraswati and the Jamuna and the Godavari, and he'd gather water in golden and silver pots, jars actually, or jugs, whatever it is. And he'd cook prasadam for the deities, he'd garland the deities, he'd dress the deities. And this way, every day, he'd sit and meditate and serve the deities. Now, we may think it was just his imagination, but actually, he was actually experiencing Krishna consciousness by such activities. Yes, in one sense, he was imaging. Krishna was providing the imaging. In other words, it wasn't that Krishna was forced to come as the deity, and because he was mentally thinking about it, but because he had the desire to serve Krishna, Krishna came as that deity, and he provided all the paraphernalia for his worship within that devotee's mind. So it wasn't some invention by the devotee, it was Krishna manifesting himself within the devotee's mind because of the devotee's desire to serve him. Just like we didn't manifest the material world here. Anyone manifest anything here? Can you manifest anything? Can anyone here, do they have the power that right now it's almost time for prasadam? Can you manufacture a birthday cake? If someone had a birthday cake, just so be it, and the birthday cake disappears. What are we imagining? What are we producing here? It's all being provided to us. Including our minds, who can create a mind? It's all being given to us actually by our desire. But we're imagining that we're imagining it. We're an illusion thinking that we're creating these things. But they're all being manifested according to our desire. By Krishna, by the material energy, by our whatever. So if we get out of in the Satyayuga when people were not so much absorbed in a false ego, some of them could sit down and Krishna would appear within their minds so they could serve them simply by their desire to serve, utilizing the power that Krishna manifested before them. They could desire to serve Krishna in various ways. But when people became a little bit contaminated at the end of Satyayuga and wanted to enjoy a little bit the material world, then Krishna created sacrifice, yagyai, jaga, because people became greedy, a little bit greedy, and therefore something had, in order to get free from this greed, so they could have a peaceful mind, Krishna, the process was throwing what you were greedy about into the sacrifice for Krishna. And that greed was simply they got a little taste for eating a little extra, that's all. Anyone ever had that experience that you just want to eat a little bit more, not too much, just a little bit more? It's not greed, it's enthusiasm for Prashadam. It's spontaneous love, that's all. It's pervading my body, especially right in my stomach. It's right. Fire, I want to throw something more into the fire of sacrifice. I'm really enthusiastic. Besides that, I just ate something pink, and that blue thing will go nicely with it. So when people became a little greedy, then sacrifice, because in sacrifice, the ghee, which is ultimately what people were greedy for. Now in this age, people are greedy for other things, for the transformation. When the ghee isn't transformed, when the blood is not transformed, then it becomes, people like that taste, the rakshashas, the taste of blood. When that blood is transformed into milk and then into ghee, that's sattvic. And it gives one the highest taste. It actually enkindles the fire of digestion, makes one healthier, and gives one satisfaction, peacefulness, a kind of feeling of being protected and love. So people had that taste, but they wanted a little bit more extra of it. And therefore, they had to throw it into the sacrifice for Krishna. And then they became peaceful. And then they could actually eat what was necessary. And therefore, their other senses were controlled, including their mind. And they can meditate upon Krishna. Then in Dwarpa Yuga, when people became even more attached, they didn't want to throw anything into the sacrifice anymore. They didn't believe that the object of the sacrifice was going to come in pure and take their offering. And therefore, Krishna manifests himself as a deity in Dwarpa Yuga so they could personally offer it to Krishna. And when they did that, then their minds became peaceful and they were willing to sacrifice other things in Krishna's service. And when they were able to sacrifice whatever paraphernalia they had, ultimately even the ghee they had, or in the forms of ghee like the ex-glubzamins or the samosas that we're keeping, they were able to sacrifice. Then their minds actually became peaceful, their senses became controlled, and they can meditate upon Krishna. In this age, we don't believe that there's the deity. We don't believe in sacrifice. Our minds are completely uncontrolled. And so Krishna has appeared as the holy name. But unless we understand what the objective is, in other words, we want to serve Krishna personally in some way. We want to offer something to Krishna. We want to do it without greed as a sacrifice, and we want to meditate upon Krishna in devotional ecstasy, then the chanting actually will help us make some progress. Of course, anyone who chants, because the chanting was offered in every age, simply by chanting, the demigods will be pleased, will actually be doing some sacrifice, however imperfectly. But still, because it's the chanting, even if it's done imperfectly, it'll give some result. At least, Prabhupada said, we'll get rain, and therefore we'll get something to eat. But for us, the chanting has to be accompanied, if we want perfection, spiritual perfection, it has to be accompanied by knowledge of the Sankirtan movement. That we have to chant without attachment to the material nature, that it's ours, with knowledge of Krishna, and with some feeling of devotion, then we'll actually get the same result as in Satya Yuga. If we do it without material attachment, simply if we become dutiful, we'll get the result of Dwarpa Yuga. And if we do it with some feeling of sacrifice, that I'm actually offering something, then we'll get the results of Treta Yuga. And if we do it with devotional feelings and love, we'll get the full result of Satya Yuga. So it depends how we chant, and therefore along with our chanting, there is philosophy, there is different ways of chanting without offense, and there's chanting with offense. And if we chant without offense, we'll develop love of Krishna. And we chant offensively, then we might get into a lot of trouble because the chanting is very powerful. But if we at least chant in not Shudanam, but Namaparad or Namabhas, at least in Namabhas, at least we'll get the perfections up to liberation from the material concepts of life, which is achieved in Satya Yuga at least. But at least we'll get free from distress. Our stomach will be filled at first. Gradually we'll become less interested in sinful life, which is the cause of distress. We'll have a nice stomach full of prasadam, so we'll be happy. Or as they say in Spanish, barriga llena, corazón contento. When the stomach's full, the heart is satisfied. And if we chant even less offensively, with some understanding, then we'll actually get realization, some knowledge. We'll become inquisitive. What is actually beyond my present realm of experience? And we'll be able to gradually experience that. Up to the point of liberation, where we have no more anxiety, where we realize we're eternal. And that's when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement starts, feeling separation from Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan, rather than simply being content by experiencing Brahman or Paramatma. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
So in this age, the sacrifice recommended is the chanting of the Maha Mantra. Yet it seems that the people's mind is not compatible with this because it's very restless, flickering, and cannot concentrate. People are more inclined in doing something physically or not doing anything at all, just staying lethargic. So how can we understand that this is the recommended process when people cannot actually concentrate on doing it?
Well, it's not that if they don't chant, they can concentrate. No, chanting requires, everything requires concentration. Can you name anything that doesn't require concentration? How can you become good at doing anything without concentration? You want to become a professional singer, you want to become a professional basketball player, you just let your mind wander everywhere. You're playing soccer on the field. You're a professional soccer player, and suddenly your mind's going all over the field. You don't know where the ball is anymore.
There are jobs that don't require so much to concentrate.
Can you name one?
Yeah, for example, swiping the streets or something that's very easy.
You have to know where the broom is, don't you?
Yeah, but I mean, require a long time
What will you get by cleaning the street? What will you achieve?
The streets are clean. Cleanliness.
But in terms of material progress or spiritual progress.
A salary?
What's that?
A salary.
That's what you'll get. So if you chant Hare Krishna in the same mood, that's what you'll get. So anyone can chant Hare Krishna and get the... You chant Hare Krishna, you'll get probably the same salary as if you're sweeping the street at least, if you don't do it with any concentration. So everyone is coming to the Hare Krishna movement with a certain assets. And if they utilize it, then they'll increase. In other words, you'll become purified. And at first, when people can't concentrate at all, gradually, by chanting Hare Krishna and trying to understand the philosophy, the mechanism of chanting offenselessly, gradually their ability to concentrate will increase. Their hearts, their minds, their senses will become purified, and it will become progressively easier to concentrate on chanting Hare Krishna and on everything else also. Yes.
So as a follow-up, people are also inclined in this age to criticize and to judge and so on. And you said that if we these are offenses. So you said that if we chant with offenses, we might get in worse trouble.
Yes.
Again, it's the same.
But that offense we're referring to is chanting in the conception of Mayavadi philosophy. That by chanting, I'm going to become God. That chanting is not very good. Nama Bharat. But if one tries to at least chant in Nama Bas, one tries to chant avoiding, if one learns the 10 offenses and tries to chant with some care and attention, then one will make progress. Now, innocent people, they may be committing all kinds of offenses, but because they're not doing it consciously, therefore, they can make progress because they'll get something from it. They're already offensive. It's like people complain when they're on the street that someone approaches them trying to sell them a book, and they complain, "Why are you agitating my mind?" So it's not that their mind was peaceful until the devotee came up to them. Anyone who approached them, anything they do is agitating their mind. But if the holy name is there, and some, because it's spiritual, therefore they get some purification at least. And if they learn the art of Krishna consciousness, then they'll learn how to chant so they actually get closer to Krishna. But if they learn the wrong philosophy about the holy name, that will act as an obstacle. If they learn that they're Krishna, and that they're going to become Radha and Krishna, and the chanting is helping them become Shiva or Radha or whatever it is, that's very bad, because that's very offensive. Yes?
I have another question, if possible. It's not related. You mentioned that at the beginning that we may say that we are not the doer and Krishna is the doer, and thus we are totally innocent, we have no fault. And I wanted to say that sometimes we seem that even in devotional service, it's easier to take the approach of not doing anything, because like that you are not criticized and you are not doing mistakes. So what's the approach if we are in that position, that if we do a service and we do mistakes, better our mind tells us better not to do anything, because like that you won't get criticized?
Well, if we listen to our mind, we'll go wherever the mind is taking us. So it's not, there's no, therefore we have Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And we have the Super Soul in our heart to tell us. So it's not that because I don't want to do something, I may do it offensively, therefore I should immediately do it. No, we have to be careful. Sometimes it's necessary to do it like that, so we don't get ourselves in more trouble than we're already in. On the other hand, if we're a little mature, then we may confront difficult situations. Like when you go on the street, for instance, trying to distribute a book, you may not be compatible with everyone who's going to stop. You may agitate their minds. You may disappoint them. But you have to take the risk, because Krishna will provide the intelligence so that in the next time you learn something, you'll be able to do your service better. So is that not that we sit and we're afraid of doing anything, we might do offense, because we'll never make any progress doing that. Matter of fact, we'll simply sit there thinking how pure we are and get puffed up, and then probably commit more offenses than we normally would have. So we have to take some risk, but not foolish risk. We should rely upon Krishna to see what our capacity for risk is, and then take it. It's like if you're out on the street, it's probably better to look around for someone who's receptive, that you'll be able to be compatible with when you're doing your service at first, and that will take a book. And then when they take a book, you become a little bit more enlivened, a little bit more convinced about the process, and then you can approach more people with more enthusiasm. And then you find out that some people who if you would have approached in the beginning without that enthusiasm, without that conviction, you would have had a not so pleasant relation with them. Now, due to your enthusiasm and conviction, they actually surrender. You're able to help them in Krishna consciousness. Anything else? Yes.
Krishna, if I understood properly, in Treta Yuga, people are very wealthy and a little more greedy, how you explain, Maharaj. And if they do sacrifices with that wealth, it will purify the greediness. Do I understand properly, actually? That is why they do great sacrifice.
Well, their wealth is in land and cows, milk, ghee, because they have jewels and everything like that, that's provided. So that's what they put into the sacrifice. I mean, how much ghee do you need? How much ghee can we eat before we get sick? So that's what they... And when you get sick, then if you start eating more than required, then the result is that your senses become agitated. When the senses become agitated, then your mind becomes agitated and you can't think clearly anymore. So that's what throwing jewels, of course, what are the jewels for? And the gold, whatever, it's to buy ghee. So therefore gold, jewels, ghee, that was their wealth. That's what they put into the sacrifice. And grains.
But is there any link if we or wealth sacrifice for Krishna's pleasure, we will purify our greediness? Is there a link between that? We will be less greedy if we offer wealth. Is that link?
Of course we'll be less greedy if you offer wealth. But if the objective is to satisfy Krishna, not that we offer wealth like people do, with the idea that they'll get money more in return. Because if they do that, then they'll realize that Krishna is the one who's offering them in return, increase the wealth, and therefore they'll become attached to Krishna that way. They'll realize that Krishna is the doer. Hopefully.
And what I didn't understood in your lecture now, if we chant... with less greediness, we will get result like in Treta Yuga, something like that.
Well, if we chant and we become purified, then we'll, and Krishna is pleased, the demigods are pleased, then we'll get the results of Dwarpa Yuga. We'll have the same kind of abundance that they had there in terms of ghee, land, cows. And then we chant less offensively with some knowledge, then we'll be able to perform whatever we're doing will be a sacrifice. We'll only be satisfied with the abundance that Krishna's providing and appreciate Him for it, but we'll also be doing everything as a sacrifice, whatever we're doing. And if we chant even more purely, and whatever we're doing, we'll be doing in Krishna consciousness.
I understand now. Thank you. Online something. Avadutaraya Das. In Banu Swami's translation of Bhagavad Gita from Vishwanath, there is no mention of the soul as the factor of action.
Because maybe there's no soul. In Vishwanath Chakrabarti, no, anyhow, what is this?
Yeah.
I don't know. You mean in that verse, 18th, in the 18th chapter, Adishtanam Tata Karta, there's no mention of the soul? I don't know.
I cannot understand also.
I mean, how can there not be a mention of the soul as one of the factors? I don't know either. You have to quote from the Bhanu Swami's translation of the commentary. I don't know.
another one, Hare Krishna Maharaj, it seems that the soul has the choice in desiring spiritually or materially, but the essence of the soul is unchangeable. So is the desiring part not the essence of the soul?
Well, the soul is unchangeable in the sense that he's always the same soul. You don't become someone different. But there's always, the soul is endlessly changing in terms of consciousness. It's always changing its consciousness. What is conscious of? Therefore, its desires are always changing. Even Krishna's desires change. But Krishna is always Krishna, no matter what his desire.
Were humans in Satya Yuga as advanced as demigods? Is in case that was Earth in that time like heavenly planets, maybe?
Yes, that's right. Generally speaking, people, after they leave the heavenly planets, whatever their result in pious activities are, they go to a place which is similar to live out that result in pious activities. And there are different degrees of demigods also. Every demigod, every level of demigod life is different degrees of goodness up to Brahma, or even in the coverings of the universe. There are different, even more advanced levels of consciousness up to Brahman realization. Different degrees of trying to lord it over and enjoy the material nature, and different degrees of ability to concentrate on Krishna. Okay. Thank you very much. Grantarai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.